Good morning, Norstad. Welcome to Free Fire Radio on KCNR, 1460 AM. It's Carl and Linda Bott. It's 7:06 in the morning. It's May 25th. Good morning. And our phone line's here, 605-4567. We're streaming at KCNR1460.com. And if you want to send us an email, you can send it to Linda at KCNR1460.com. We're joined today, of course, by our studio impresiano, who's making strange noises over there.
It doesn't matter how quietly you try to move the mic stand, it will squeak on you when you don't want it to.
It probably has a sign there that says, somebody needs to WD-40 these, and the sign's been there for 4 months, so okay. I guess we'll take care of that today.
Good morning, Carl. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
And how
good
are
morning.
You today?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourselves?
Well, you know, before we get to the heart of the show here, Linda, we're talking about schoolwork.
Oh, yeah.
I met your beautiful 15-year-old daughter yesterday.
Yes.
And we started talking about homework, and share with us your experience of what your child is going through.
Well, both of my children are AP honors level type kids. We're going to university prep, and the homework situation is borderline ridiculous. When we first started going there, both the students, the teachers would tell each class would say, "Hey, we 2 to 3, 4 hours of homework a night per class," and that's like, you know, that's like 15 hours of homework. That's ridiculous. So the parents revolted, and now it's quasi manageable. But my daughter gets so stressed because she'll have homework. She'll be up until 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night trying to finish some kind of homework, and at 15, she's just stressed beyond belief. So she has two choices, either do the homework and get the grade or don't do the homework and fail out of the class. So she's one of these people that says, I'm going to do the homework. And so, you know, what social life she should have, she doesn't have much of. And so we've decided, you know, sanity for my daughter and sanity for my wife and I, because it's like, well, Heather, you going to come? No, I got too much homework, Mom. I can't go. Well, Heather, let's go. No, I got too much homework, Dad. I can't go. So we're going to pull her out of there and do a quasi-homeschool independent study type thing through Stellar Charter School. So that's, but it's just, I don't remember ever having that kind of homework. But then again, I didn't take EP and honors courses either. So.
Well, you know, I've run into other families whose kids are bringing home backpacks full of books, and that they're in there for 3 or 4 hours a night. They come in, they come home from school, they literally start on it. They have dinner, they go back up and finish it. I mean, and I thought, those kids are being quiet. Well, it's because they're doing homework. The ones that are into the advanced classes, I mean, the other, you know, that was daughter. The son was, he had a little more time in his hands.
Well, yeah, my son's at Foothill now. Him being a bright kid, he can get his homework and stuff done. And, of course, he's figured out the system and realized, well, I don't have to take AP classes. I can still take honors. I can still get into college, and I can still, you know, pull decent grades when he puts his mind to it. But, you know, he kind of figured out that, you know, this stress and strain of doing this kind of homework, and I think it was about 6th or 7th grade, they started bringing math to me, and it's like, go talk to your mom. She's a math whiz, and then she's like, I don't know.
There are things that they're being taught in school. In fact, today, and this is really an appropriate subject for our friends out there, because today at 8 o'clock, we're having a lady call in. Elisa's calling in from the Reason Foundation. And we're going to talk about education and what happened down in Watts. I mean, literally a revolution that started down there, and at a public school, about education and about their kids. And the community took the school back and took on the teachers' unions when they did it. It's going to be a pretty interesting spot. But speaking of really interesting, though, she's sitting right next to me. Linda, hey, honey.
Well, good morning. In case you are wondering about the weather, and what's going to be happening today, I'm afraid to tell you that it's going to be mostly cloudy with the chance of rain in the morning, and then overcast with rain in the afternoon. Highs today of about 55 to 61. There's going to be winds to 10 miles per hour with gusts of around 30 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight, rain in the evening, but there is kind of a National Weather Service watches, warnings, and advisories, and this is for Shasta Lake area, Northern Shasta, Burney. There is a little bit of a hazardous weather outlook for the interior of Northern California. Day one, I love this one. Day one, dot, 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 today. It's like, ticka, 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 tick. You want to hear that ticker tape in the back. Another cool weather system from the Pacific will move into the Northern California today, spreading precipitation inland across the region. Periods of moderate to occasionally heavy snow will be possible over the crest of the Northern Sierra Nevada tonight and early Wednesday. There's a winter storm watch. Hello? Where are we?
May 25th.
Expect
snow around that 6,000-foot level and rain today, rain tomorrow, and thunderstorms, I think, on Thursday. And all this good news is brought to you by...
Anselmo. Anselmo Vineyards, our favorite destination getaway.
Hey,
it's 7:11 in the morning. Today's May 25th, as we said. We've got to take a break here. Good morning. It's going to be a fabulous day. It's what you make it. Carl and Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio. This is KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Hi. Well, good morning, Reading.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Our phone line's here, 605-4567.
You know, they can hear what's happening at the break. There's a firestorm at the break.
Well, we got a lot of things to talk about here. We've got, got the Family Justice Center coming on at 7:30. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on. Did you see that? If you saw the paper today or the news last night, or if you've been talking to anybody, you know that Peter Hansen, our chief of police, is retiring after 2 years. Why? Why is Chief Hansen retiring after 2 years? He said personal and professional reasons. Okay. Well, that makes then, if he retires, that gives us three police chiefs here in town. Bob Blankenship, Leonard Modi, and now Peter Hansen. Now we're going to get another chief. How many police chiefs can we afford? Of course, the three of them are all making over $100,000 a year in retirement. I don't begrudge them their retirement. That's just the way it is. But why after 2 years did Chief Modi, but Hansen retire? I'd like to find that out. I'd like him to tell us why he retired. This is going to be a really, really tough time for the police and for the city of Reading. We need Chief Hansen's leadership. We need him to be there while this is going on. I realize that he can retire and not have the headaches and all that, and because he can retire at 90%, and that he's going to be making over $100,000 a year, maybe he just doesn't want the headaches of this. But I quite frankly am surprised that he is retiring. I am. You know, I admire Chief Hansen. I think he's a leader. I don't understand why he's retiring at this point right now, unless there's something going on in his personal life. And if that's the case, you know, then fair winds and following seas, Chief. But if it's because he's it's the fighting with the city council, or if he's going to get out and run for city council or do something like this, I don't understand it. And now we've got to come in. From what I understand, the two senior lieutenants or captains that are under him are both retiring this year too. So what happens now? Well, let's go talk about where in the finances of our city anyway. We are in trouble here. We do have to make cuts. But where do we make these cuts? There's going to be a lot of different articles and examples of all this coming out. But I just wanted to address the Chief Hansen retirement. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that we brought somebody in and after 2 years somebody from within the department after 2 years he leaves. It just doesn't seem right. And so I hope this is not just because you're fed up, Chief. Because a lot of times we're all fed up. Like I said, we need your leadership in the department. And I hope that it's not just something like, I just don't want to put up with this anymore.
Well, okay. I hear what you're saying. I'd be curious to hear what our listeners have to say. Some people don't call in because I don't know if they feel like their voice is going to be heard. Someone's going to say, that's so-and-so calling. You can always email us if you have questions or you want to talk about something, linda@kcnr1460.com. But, it's something that we talked about, and I think it was validated last night, our worried feeling about gangs and influx of gangs coming into town. And the other day when we came to the came home, and there were the calls about the armed APB and the helicopters over the circling our neighborhood and it really put the fear in me because I thought I can't even go in my own backyard. It really kind of weirded me out. You know, I've lived in, you know, Los Angeles. I've been in metropolis cities that are crime ridden, but in Redding, I just was weirded out about it. And if you think about the fact that we may be cutting our police department back, now is not the time. And I was just wondering, you know, as we spot check along the ways, and we ask different people, what do you think? Is it because there's so many pot co-ops that are coming in? Are you sensing something?
Well, you know, the thing is that you're exactly right. The first time we've ever had a phone call like this, and it was from the city police saying that, you know, there's somebody in your neighborhood, and then they call back and say they've lifted that. And now we're getting ready to cut loose, I think, 8 policemen here during the summer. Either not, you know, they're retiring or not being replaced, or they're cutting loose people. I think there's got to be a lot of things that we can do or we can bring up and we can talk, you know, that needs to be a discussed before all this happens. But the big thing is that both sides have got to kind of get together here and come up with a plan that works for everybody. And that may not be. It may not be a plan that works for everybody, but it ought to be for people that works for the city of Redding and for the taxpayers. And we don't get into a fist fight and everybody gets their backs up and just says, I'm not going to give anything, because it impacts on all of us. This is Carl and DeBott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio with Carl and Linda Bott. It's May 25th, and it's 7:23 and a half. Well, it will be when we turn on our microphones. Okay, can you hear me? Is it going out? Can you hear me?
How are we doing?
Okay.
That was weird. What happened? Okay. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on in the air with all this electrical frequency, I'll tell you.
Hey, you know what, though? We are giving away, I say we, B&T Satellite is giving away a $450 complete wireless sound system that you can use indoors or outdoors. All you have to do is you go down to B&T Satellite. It's on Airport Road, just right off Airport Road. You can see it from Airport Road on Charlon Drive. You just have to fill out a form, and you can enter to win a $450 value. If you have an iPhone, a cassette, CD, iPod, 8-track, anything, it will play it. It'll play it, and you will have your wireless sound system for the summer. Anyway, we're going to be on location there on Friday, May 28th, and we're going to do the drawing. You've got to come by and see us anyway, but go on down there, put your name in their box there, and we will draw that, and whoever wins, B&T Satellite will deliver it to you, and they'll set it up. What a great deal.
You know what's really cool about this? You know, here's the reality. We are in a time when we're, you know, watching our pennies, and Memorial Day weekend's coming up, obviously, this weekend, my gosh. And here's a chance for you. I know it's weird because Airport Road is not where, you know, it's not like your destination, but it's not that far. So just go out there, like Carl said, fill out the form. I mean, because really, we're giving it away on Friday. It's very cool. And you could have a really cool sound system if you win it for free over Memorial Day weekend. You'll have it blasting in your backyard with your favorite tunes and move it around your house.
They won't let us win it because I've tried to enter 3 or 4 times, and they said no. Okay, let's go to the phones. John, you're on line one.
How are you this morning?
Hey, great. We're having a little bit of microphone issues, but go ahead.
Okay, over the radio, though. It's just in the studio.
Yeah,
I think
it's just in our earphones here.
Okay. Listen, I'm going to respond to what you were talking about with the chief. You know, it really took a lot of people by surprise. I did a show with Peter Hansen recently, and the chief, he couldn't be a more dedicated law enforcement officer. But I think that this situation is getting him down with having to lay off over 20 of his staff personnel. And he's facing more cuts with actual patrol officers. And I think the vitality of coming to work every day is gone. it's no longer fun. It's no longer, you know, it's not a challenge. It's just depressing. And I think, you know, along with everyone else, he didn't foresee this. And he's kind of stuck with the experience. But you figure that a man who's been on the job 30 years and is seeing people that he worked with off and on throughout that entire period, that he has to cut loose, it's a little bit depressing. And more than just being a down period, I mean, he's seeing the shrinkage of his department. I'm really going to miss the chief. He had a real sensible approach to providing security to the community, and I wish him the best. I think he's going to, you know, he's still going to be an asset to the community.
Well, you know, I agree. You know, I admire Chief Hansen. I just, you know, leaving in the middle of the fight, though.
I understand what you're saying.
I'm having a problem with that. And the thing is I know it's rough. And he's losing people he's been with for 20 years and or longer. But the ones that are over 20 years, I mean, they're retiring at more money than you make.
For sure.
Yeah, and so, you know, and that's, you know, part of this whole problem is brought on by the retirement system. And we cannot continue to support that. On the other hand, we need to have our frontline defenders there. So what's another, you know, other ways? Is there other ways to cut back on things? You know, are we looking at privatization of everything? How about the trash? Somebody just said, you know, the guys come by to wash the streets. Remember, people are like, they come by like every other day. What a great contract that is.
Yeah, it seems like it, doesn't it? No. And I agree with you. I think that privatization of a lot of things is an essential. And I'm wondering, and I'm just throwing this out there because I don't know, I haven't heard anything. A lot of communities are going to combining police and sheriff into one unit. And I'm wondering if this is on the table or if the chief has a feeling for this and possibly he just doesn't want to deal with it.
I don't know. You know,
I don't know either. But I think we're,
you know, personal and professional reasons, that's one thing. But
we don't know.
And, you know, well, you know, the other thing, too, is that between the three retired chiefs and the new chiefs, that's going to be almost $500,000.
I do know that.
That's $500,000 we're talking about there. I mean, yeah, three of them come out of Calspur that I think we still pay or we paid into, and then the new chief. And I don't think the new chief will come out of the ranks.
Well, they don't. It looks like the one captain's position is unfilled. And another one, both of the other two are in a position to retire themselves.
That's what I heard, is that they would retire, but maybe they won't, maybe one won't. But then again, are you going to get another 2 years so they can spike their pay and that's it?
That's it's a sad thought. And
I don't know. And you know what? Again, we admire Chief Hansen. I'm just, like probably most people, we're just kind of like, wow.
Yeah, I know. And I'm wondering how much more of this we're going to see. I know the fire chief has to be getting fed up, too, and he's pretty close to retirement.
Hey, we got to run, John, right
Take
here.
Care.
Right. Okay,
nice
thanks for calling.
Bye.
Okay, when we come back, we'll have the Family Justice Center in here. We're going to be talking about that and a couple other another topics that will be going on. You know, Senior Expo starting tomorrow, the whole thing. This is Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
Nosediving early, the Dow fell over 200 points below 10,000 just in the opening minutes. Market traders like Teddy Weisberg of Seaport Securities say there's concern over world events like the tension between North and South Korea.
We live in a world of volatility and momentum, and clearly we're on the negative side of the mountain at the moment.
Home prices in March fell in 13 of the 20 cities. The Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller Index, they rose in 6...
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It's Carl and Linda Bott. It's May 25th, and it's 7:34. Phone lines here are 605-4567. It's a walk of life.
Okay, am I working now?
You're working now.
Okay,
so you always work.
Yeah, we have a really special guest with us this morning, and plus we have somebody on the phone. But we were understanding that, you know, something happened with a little disconnect, and we all know what happens.
You remember that big thing we always said, don't touch the red wire?
I think Snooki was in here with the
wire. I touched the red wire last night. I touched the red wire, and things have been, we've had people all over this place.
You are
since
such
then.
A bad boy. You always
I know. What can
try
I say?
To touch the red wire.
Okay, hey, look, let's hop on the phones real quick here. Let's go to Jim on line one. Hey, Jim, you're on KCNR.
Hey, how you folks doing?
We're great.
Good. Hey, I caught the last segment of your of the last segment.
Yeah.
You're talking about, you know, the gangs and stuff that are coming up here. Another thing I noticed, I was talking to my wife about the other day. Have you noticed how there's been a huge influx of transients in the downtown area?
Well, you know, yes, I have noticed that, and we're talking about, you know, people we haven't seen in town before. I mean, we were driving down the other day and saw two or three people, gang tattoos and all types of stuff going. Well, gosh, I haven't seen them before.
One of my coworkers was telling me about on Lake Boulevard. He said he saw a group of like eight guys dressed in gang apparel with red bandanas.
Oh, wow.
And he said it was just like, you know, he felt like he was in South Central. So I'm concerned, too, about the law enforcement situation right now. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, you know, this is something that we really need to take a look at. You know, and this is what I mean. Right at that point where the things are getting tough here. And so, you know, we're looking at cuts in the police department. We're opening up. And again, you know, numerous marijuana communes are opening up. Transients are starting to come in. There's all types of things that are happening right now that it's I'm hoping that we're not heading for the perfect storm. You know what I mean?
And another thing, a lady that went to Shasta High School here, I think she graduated in the 50s. She said that, I believe it was in the early 50s, California Street in Redding had one of the worst skid rows north of Sacramento. She said it was terrible. Like,
yeah.
You know, and I hope we don't get back to that. So anyways, I'll let you guys go. And
okay. Thanks a whole lot for the phone call. We appreciate that.
Okay, bye.
Okay, let's go to line two. Bruce, you're on line two.
Bruce, you're on KCNR.
Sure.
Can you hear us okay, Bruce?
Yeah, a little scratchy, but we're okay.
Okay, yeah, we're having having engineers running through our headphones right now. Okay, well, what do you have?
Anyhow, I just think that you just seen the tip of the iceberg about these retirements because it's unsustainable the way it is, and there are going to have to be some drastic changes made. And the state of Oregon, you know, they saw this coming a little bit quicker than California did, and they, one of the first things that they did, they upped their retirement age to 64. And I think that's probably one of the things that's going to have to be addressed here in California. And so these people that want to get out early, which they are doing by the hundreds, and they can go out and they can actually get another job, you know, 53 or 54, 50. That's young enough. That's really young enough
to
start a second career.
Yeah. Well, that's an idea. You know, I think you're right, Bruce. Hey, Bruce, thanks for your phone call.
You betcha.
All right.
Okay. Well, let's go to with all the stuff that's going on, I guess this is really kind of appropriate.
This is our little personal firestorm going on right here.
I'm having personal and professional problems right now.
No, that's okay. You know what? We've got a really wonderful event that's coming tomorrow. Besides, you know, in the morning, of course, there's the Senior Expo, but tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow evening is the ladies' luncheon for the Shasta Family Justice Center. And with us today, a guest in the studio, I was so fortunate that I called you at 6:30 and said, please come in, Dan Kupski, and tell us about the Family Justice Center, why you're involved, and tell our listeners about what this event is all about.
Well, it's a great event, and good morning. Thanks for that wake-up call
absolutely.
This morning. Hey,
thank you
best
for
wake
being
up
here.
Call I
you
have.
Are a trooper.
Yeah.
See, we've been up for 2 hours at that point. We believe everybody should be up.
Absolutely. The Shasta Family Justice Center, it's a great concept and idea. Jerry Benito at the DA's office, it's got a part of this with there's a state initiative to put justice centers in communities. And what this is, it's one place that victims of sexual abuse, physical abuse, assaults, all types of victims of crime can go to one place and get all their services met. You have people from the district attorney's office, women's refuge, probation. Healthcare, you can do everything in one location so the victims don't have to tell their story four and five and six times, make scheduled appointments and go from police department to DA's office to, you know, all these different places. It's one location with all the victims' rights. It's awesome. And so I got behind that because I spent almost 28 years with Reading Police Department. My wife is a child protective service worker, has done sexual abuse cases for, you know, 24, 25 years, and we see what happens to victims as they go in the system. It's just a better way for victims to access the system, be supported by the system. It's a great concept. So this event is to raise money and funds for the Shasta Family Justice Center. They've got the location. They just need the funds to put this all together. It's coming soon. And so there's a fashion show and a luncheon the 26th, which is tomorrow, at the Gaia Hotel in Anderson, starting at 11 o'clock. And so a great lunch, a fashion show, and you hear a guest speaker. His name is Casey Gwynn, and he's an articulate, unbelievable speaker from what I've heard. And he can speak on the California Family Justice Center Initiative, which sponsors these centers throughout the state.
And when we take a break, after the break, he's on the line.
He's here.
But let's go into the evening, because we have just 30 seconds before we take a break, about what's happening with the wine tasting.
Well, then that night, tomorrow night, from 5:30 to 8 at the Anselmo Vineyards in Shingletown. If you haven't been up there, what a beautiful place, a slice of heaven. They're having a wine tasting with great hors d'oeuvres. Casey, who's on the line right now, is going to give a keynote speech about the Justice Center and the initiative. And so it should be a great time with wine tasting and food. And, again, the event all benefits the Shasta Family Justice Center. And we'll tell you later how to get tickets and how to be a part of
it. Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a break, but I understand Bob and China Rose and you and your lovely wife, Judy, are going to serve as our official hosts.
Yes, we are.
We appreciate you putting your energy and your love into our community like this. So we're going to take a break. This is Carl and Linda Bott here. And hang on, because we have somebody phenomenal on the other line. You might have seen him on Oprah. He's been on Oprah. He's got books out. He travels around the world talking about this very thing that's going to be happening tomorrow. This is KCNR 1460, clearly, News Talk Radio.
Paid for by...
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott at 745. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. Finest tobacco emporium in the state of California. Joe and Shelley have got Espresso Joe's for coffee and lattes, anything you want, any way you want. Joe and Shelley, great Americans, support our community.
And speaking of great Americans, on the phone with us, we're so fortunate to have this wonderful man who's coming to town on Wednesday, that's tomorrow, to speak on behalf of the Family Justice Center. His name is Casey Gwynn. Good morning, Casey. Welcome to KCNR.
Good morning.
How are you doing? This is Carl.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Fine, Casey. Hey, Casey, would you mind explaining to our listeners the Family Justice Center and how it started?
Well, really, it started initially in San Diego, at least the first Family Justice Center. And for us, the concept was really simple. We just thought, we got a lot of places where we make victims have to go, and we started counting, and we found 32 different places where victims of abuse and their kids had to go to get all the help they needed. And we said, we just can't do that anymore. We've got to come up with one place. And that was our journey. We first started looking at it in the mid-1990s. It took us until 2002 to get the first Family Justice Center open. And this very simple idea has now just spread like wildfire. We have 60 Family Justice Centers open around the country. And obviously Shasta County is in the process right now of becoming one of those centers to say, hey, you have one place you can go. You can get everything you need in one place. That's the goal.
Well, the how did Reading get selected for this?
Reading was actually selected in a competitive process. We have an initiative funded by the Blue Shield of California Foundation right now. And Blue Shield is funding the development and the strategic planning and technical assistance for 6 new centers. So we had a competitive process. We ended up selecting 6 communities that we really felt were ready for this statewide. And Shasta County was one of those communities because of the support of the DA and the sheriff and the shelter and so many other agencies there that said, hey, we can figure out how to all come together to make this work.
Now, from what I understand, there's going to be little tax funding on this. Is that correct? Or is that going to be part of it?
Yeah, I sure hope there's some, but it's always a mix of funding. The reality is that this is a public safety initiative. If you really want to save lives, if you really want to keep police officers from going back to the same houses over and over and over again, then you need to make this a priority. So I think it should have some public funding over time. I mean, we spend a lot of money on a lot of things that the government cares about, and public safety is number one. But I do think that this is a great opportunity to not create a bureaucracy, to not create something that's just going to suck a lot of money out of the system, but is really taking all the existing resources that are already there in a community and saying, let's put them all together. And in that way, it's a pretty cost-effective way to help families and to stop violence and abuse.
Well, you know, how it's been explained is that when people come here, it's almost like that one-stop shopping. People that are having problems do not need to go to 14 different places, a lot of times with no vehicle. You know, they're going to have to use buses or walk or something like this. And this seems like a way that is cost effective, that can help people and can also maybe do some preventative maintenance so it doesn't happen again.
Well, and there's a lot of ways that people can get involved in something like this. You know, if there's some individual nonprofit doing good work, some people will volunteer with that agency, but not very many. But when you get a family justice center together and you have 6, 8, 10, 15 agencies working together, every member of the community can do something. They can donate, they can volunteer, they can donate in kind. Churches can get involved. Community-based organizations can get involved. Service clubs can get involved. There are just a lot of ways that people can help to say, you know what, instead of waiting until we have kids growing up in violent and abusive homes that go on to be criminals as teenagers or adults, maybe we should get in and love them when they're 8, 10 years old. And if we get in and stop it then and stop the violence and provide the resources, one, we're going to have a lot healthier families in our community, and two, we're not going to be locking up so many folks at 18, 19, 20, 21 when they come out of those kind of homes and they make really bad choices and end up committing crimes.
Well, tomorrow, Casey Glenn will be in town for the luncheon for the Shasta Family Justice Center, and then tonight, and then that night for the wine tasting at Anselmo's, and you're going to be speaking at both events. And we've seen you on Oprah Winfrey. Tell us, when you were on Oprah, what was the basis of that particular show?
Well, it was very gratifying when we, after we opened the San Diego Family Justice Center, to have Oprah Winfrey really endorse the concept and say this is the right way to help women and children. It's the right way to help men who are victims of domestic violence. It's the right way to help families. And I never imagined, quite frankly, when Oprah asked me to come on the show, one, that it would get so much exposure, and two, I ended up being on for 2 days. They made the after show another national broadcast, so we actually were on the Oprah Winfrey Show for 2 days, really debating partly the future of how to deal with family violence in America, but also really looking at the best way to help victims and provide services, and obviously the Family Justice Center was that kind of model that Oprah endorsed. And I got to say, after I was on Oprah, you know, she goes all over the world. Within a year, we had site visitors at the San Diego Family Justice Center from 70 countries. Coming to look at our model. So when Oprah Winfrey says this is a good idea, a lot of people pay attention.
Yeah, you talk about the big dog of the pack.
Yeah, pretty powerful there.
Hey, we're going to have to take a quick book break here, Casey, and just please hang on, and we'll be getting back to you in just a minute. Carl on the bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
Ladies and
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bodd. It is 7:54.
Currently 54 degrees, going to be mostly cloudy today with a chance of rain, then overcast with rain in the afternoon, highs to 55 to 61. You're making little finger gestures. What are you trying to say?
Nothing.
Welcome back, and of course we've got Casey Gwynn on the line, who is going to be our keynote speaker tomorrow for our luncheon at the Gaia Hotel. It's a fashion show luncheon for the Family Justice Center, and then $25 tickets for that, and $35 for the wine tasting that night. That's tomorrow night at Ensemble, or $50 for both. We're going to give you some information. You can hear Casey speak at both events. We're so thrilled to have you come in to give us an overview. And you're going to be talking about this model, the Family Justice Center, that's not just something that's really become very successful in the state, but throughout the nation.
Yeah, there's really a perception out there in a lot of communities that somehow this must already exist, you know, that everybody works together in a community and victims have a relatively easy time of coming forward to find help, but it's simply not true. And this very simple idea we're talking about, co-locating all the services, bringing staff from many agencies to one place, is a simple idea that's really complicated to do. And it's hard to get everybody to work together. And we really need the community to get excited about it, and we need agencies to engage in it. And I really believe that the moment is right for Shasta County. Jerry Benito's done a great job of kind of rallying the troops from his background as the DA. Angela Fitzgerald's done a great job working on this from the DA's office, coming from a victim assistance standpoint. And I got to say, when I was up there a number of months ago for the strategic planning process, I was so impressed I mean, just really good people from many agencies all sitting down together and saying, okay, we know this is hard to do, but how can we get it done? Because 5 years from now, we don't want the same rate of family violence in Shasta County. 5 years from now, we want this community to be safer. We want families to be safer. We want kids to be safer. So I'm looking forward to coming up there tomorrow, to sharing with folks, to meeting folks. And, of course, I have a love affair with Shasta County. I grew up houseboating on Lake Shasta, spent a lot of time in Redding over the years. So,
hey, Casey.
A little homecoming for me.
Yeah, hey, Casey. The Shasta Lake is full. It is, for the first time. It's full. It's up to the
top. I just got a little bit of a little bit of goosebump there on my arm. just made my day.
Well, I tell you what, you know, we're ready to rock and roll here this summer. Anyway, hey, Casey, thank you so much for being our guest today, and can't wait to listen to you and see you tomorrow.
We also have Dan Kupski here, who was hosting the event. He and his lovely wife, Judy, and the Morrisons. So we've been talking about it before your call and after your call. So thank you so much, Casey. We'll see you tomorrow.
Look forward to meeting you, Casey.
Thanks so much, friends. Thanks so much. Look forward to being with you.
All right. Thank you.
So, Dan.
Well, you know, it's such a great concept, as Casey said. And I see it not only helping victims, but in my experience in law enforcement, working together, these organizations and agencies working together, it makes them stronger. Anytime you get all these agencies interacting in one place, the flow of communication becomes easier. So instead of, you know, when one agency talks to the other, you're right there, you got one victim, one case, one crime, and it just brings everything together. So it's going to make the agencies better, the interaction better, the communication better. It's a win-win, and I really think the DA's office is really stepping up to the plate for the victims of Shasta County to put this together. So we're excited. And I urge everybody to get information about how to come down to the Guy Hotel for a luncheon and fashion show, and then the wine tasting up in Anselmo. What a beautiful place. And to hear Casey speak and have the great food up there at Anselmo, if you haven't been there.
Tell our listeners how, if there's any last-minute tickets, how they can get them.
Well, I would call the Shasta County District Attorney's Office at 245-6310. That's the admin number, 245-6310. 245-6310, say, I want to be there. I want to hear Casey Gwynn. I want to find out how I can support and help the Shasta Family Justice Center, and they'll give you the information. 245-6310. How's that?
245-6310. And before we just have a few minutes left here before we have to go to break. You have had how many years in law enforcement? And then tell us a little bit about your wife, and that's a key why you guys are involved with this.
Oh, yeah. I spent nearly 28 years with the Redding Police Department. Seven of those years I was an investigator on sexual and physical abuse cases with children. My wife has been a longtime Child Protective Service worker. She's worked in the field. She was at the old YMCA Youth and Family Counseling Center we had here on Tehama Street. But she's been with CPS on sexual abuse cases for way too many years. She's got over 25, 26 years in the field. And so every day we see what the victims have to go through. Sometimes the red tape, and it seems sometimes overwhelming to these victims of these assaults and abuse cases. And it's nice to have one location, eliminate the need for countless interviews and telling their story to one person and telling their story to another person. Let's do it once. Let's do it right. Let's give the victims everything they need. And
well, you know, will we also look at maybe consolidation of some of the agencies there so that we can, you know, they can cut through all that. So you got one person in charge of.
Well, it's going to speed up time, and you know, there'll be, in my understanding, at this at the Family Justice Center, Woman's Refuge will have representatives there, probation will have representatives there, everybody in Shasta County.
Well, thank you so much. You know, it's family for the Family Justice Center. We're going to talk about it again in the next hour and remind everybody how you get your tickets. But that starts tomorrow. I'll be at the Guy Hotel and out at Anselmo's. This is Carl Underbot on Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
And this is KCNR Shasta Redding.
Now, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. It's 8:05 and a half on May 25th, and today is going to be a rocking day. We've got a lot of stuff going on. It's, you know, and the weather today is going to be
cloudy and 56 degrees, right, currently 56 degrees. You're going to expect, you know, scattered showers this morning. So weather's always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. So go out and be ready with those layers.
That's right. You know, we've got this hour. Right now we've got Senator Sam Onestad's on the line, and let's go to Sam.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
How are you doing today, Senator?
I'm doing great.
Okay, so we're having a little bit of issue with some wiring, and so if you're hearing us with a little bit of a delay, that's why. But so good morning and welcome to KCNR, Senator, and this is Carl and Linda. And what's going on?
Well, I'll tell you, we got 2 weeks to go, and then this primary election is all over, where we have our two leading governor's candidates on the Republican side going to end up spending probably close to $80 to $90 against each other. It's just amazing to me, how elections are run these days.
Well, you know what is with all the money that's being spent, Senator?
Well, it's all about name recognition and trying to get the message out. You know, two people who have not been involved in statewide politics really that much, although Steve Poizner has been the insurance commissioner, and wanting to get their name recognition out, and yet in doing so they feel like they have to be beating each other up. And in fact, what it does is confuse the voters, I think, and we see that because absentee ballots are not being mailed in at the rate that people thought they would be. They're holding on because I think people are confused and they don't know who to vote for.
Well, you know, the problem we have here, what we're seeing is with all this, you know, in the negative advertising, you've got both of them are saying, you know, that both of them are soft on this or soft on that, and they're both saying, no, you know, it's the other person's that way. I mean, at what point do the people just say, you know, I've had enough of this?
Yeah, well, we'll know in 2 weeks, won't we?
Well, how are you doing, Senator?
As far as our race goes, you know, I'm having a ball. I never knew that I could enjoy campaigning as much as I did, and I think it's because of who I'm campaigning against, and also it's because of the reception that I see out there and the passion that I see out in the state as I go from city to city. You know, I've been involved now just for 12 years running for office. I'm not a career politician, but I'm termed out of the Senate. Never really enjoyed campaigning until this time around. But, you know, people have, the giant has been awakened. And I just noticed this starting last fall when, in fact, up in Reading, you know, I was asked to go into talk to a group of people at the Holiday Inn on a rainy Monday night. And my goodness, I walked into the room and there's 400 people in there and they're just mad as heck and they're not going to take it anymore. Instead of watching Monday night football, they're home, they're at the Holiday Inn wondering and planning how are we going to take our government back. And they're not just Republicans, you know, they're disgruntled Democrats, they're declined estates, they're folks who some of them haven't even voted for a while, but they realize government has not been delivering on its promises and it's very expensive, and so the people are going to do something about it. I see that as I go up and down the state, and you know that's really exciting for democracy, and so I'm really encouraged no matter how this election comes out. I think the public is engaged, and they are going to take their government back.
Well, we really appreciate a lot of the things, or very many of the things that you do, Senator. I know that you were instrumental in helping to get this veterans' home up here.
Oh yeah, you know I had a small part in it. You know I'm not going to take much credit other than you know I happened to be the senator at the time who could put some legislation in to get them the final funding to get Washington to say, okay, let's go do it and match the funds. But it really was your group of veterans up there, John Kleckner and his group, and Maurice Johannesson, as he just became a senator, and then, you know, he was the secretary for Veterans Affairs for a brief stint. And that was a priority for the people of the North State. And it was really their combined effort, and they did not give up. Even when the budget fell out from underneath everybody a few years back, they got the governor to promise that he was going to build these California veterans homes. We did have the Southern California people try to abscond with some of the funds, and I'm not saying they did anything illegal, but you know, a $200 million cost overrun on the Los Angeles veterans homes just depleted all of the funds for the veteran and the Fresno homes, and we didn't think that was ever going to happen. And then we got to put that legislation in, and the federal government came along and said we'll match it, and things happened. And gosh, last week we had the groundbreaking. So it was really the people up in the North State who are doing this, and they need to get the credit.
Well, you know, we've got to take a quick break here, Senator, but we appreciate what you did to help us with this. You know, I know you say you played a small part, right? You're running for lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
Your opponent is was appointed to a position,
he was appointed to the position. You know, he traded his vote to increase your taxes last year.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And
remember that.
As a reward, you know, he gets to be appointed to the position, and that just got me to thinking that, you know, people shouldn't be appointed to such high positions. It should be the voters who choose, and so I'm going to give them a choice.
Well, you know what, Senator, you got our backing, because we don't endorse people here, but I tell you what, something that we've got to take a break here, but something that he said while he was there at the groundbreaking, when he said that his children would never be veterans, and hopefully his grandchildren would never be veterans. I couldn't believe, first of all, he said that in front of an audience of veterans.
Well,
and maybe he just misspoke, but when he did, I thought, well, maybe I just misunderstood that. But if I did, there was many others that misunderstood that.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to speak for Abel, but sometimes he doesn't realize what he's saying.
Well, you know what? He sure as heck didn't realize what he said that day, because there was, I tell you what, there's a lot of ears that just kind of came up, and you saw these old grizzled heads kind of go, did he really say that?
Yeah.
Anyway. Senator, thank you so much for your phone call.
Okay, are we done? Do you want me to hang around? Do you want to?
Well, we got to take a break, and then we'll come back right after the right after the break. This is Colin DeBott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Philadelphia News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio here on KCNR 1460. It's Carlin and DeBott. It's 8:16. Our guest for this segment is Senator Sam Honestad.
Senator.
Yes.
And so the campaign is going forward and it's going strong. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're doing well. I'm in San Francisco tonight, and was in Napa with the Tea Party people on Saturday. It's just amazing the number of people that are turning out and have heard that my opponent is the one who traded his vote to get Proposition 14 on the ballot, and then is rewarded by being made the new lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just feel that the people should decide. So I've entered this campaign. I've got the backing of the Jarvis Gann taxpayers and Senator Tom McClintock and veterans groups and the young Republicans and Republican groups all over. And we're going to just try to take our message to the people, and hopefully on Tuesday they'll choose someone who has kept their commitment to the voters and not voted to raise taxes and not traded it for personal gain. That's all I can hope for.
Well, what's for the lieutenant governor? What are some of the accomplishments you can do as a lieutenant governor? Sam?
Well, that's what a lot of people don't realize. You know, they say it's a nothing position, but first of all, it's the backup position. You know, you're the number two quarterback, and so you should have somebody there who's pretty familiar with what the issues of the state are in case you have to take over. But you're also on 12 different boards and commissions that are very important to the state of California. As the chairman of the Economic Development Corporation, you're basically in charge of economic development in the state, and yet the previous lieutenant governors haven't even shown up for those meetings. And, of course, the economy needs to be turned around, and there's things you can do there. You're a trustee on the Board of Regents. You're a regent on the Board of Regents for the university. You're a trustee for the colleges. You're on the State Lands Commission. You determine one of three people whether you're going to open new fields for oil drilling and oil production in the state. You're on the Coastal Commission. You're on the Ocean Protection Council. There's a lot of different places where a conservative philosophy is needed and a conservative voice is needed and has been lacking, and that's what I want to do.
Well, like I said, Senator, you know, you've represented us well up here in the North State, and we appreciate your phone call, and I know that you have the support of the community up here.
Thank you for your call, Senator. We appreciate your input always.
And we'd like to talk to you again before the election if we can do that.
Well, I'd love to. Just let us know when, and I'll be there.
All right. You know, we offered it to your opponent, too, and, you know, in writing, and if they ever want to appear, of course, because we give equal time on it. But we would like to be able to talk to him and ask him a few questions, too, at some point.
That's only fair. I hope he replies.
Yes, sir. Well, again, Senator, thank you so much for your phone call.
Hey, thank you, guys, for your interest.
Thank you.
You bet.
You bet. And coming up, we have a special, a very, very special call, Lisa Schnell. We're going to be talking about education. We're going to talk about something that's happened. You do not want to miss this story. This is Carla Lindbott. We got to take a break here, but wait for... Hang in with us after the break, after these messages.
Yeah. Now, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. The time is 8:23. And you know what? I don't get too excited about guests. I am excited about this lady
here. Yes, you do.
Well, okay, I do get excited about guests, but I like to say that. Our guest for the remainder of our show is Lisa Schnell. She's the Director of Education and Child Welfare at the Reason Foundation. It's a nonprofit think tank for advancing free minds and free markets, and you got to just love that. She's testified before the California State Legislature and numerous other state legislatures and government agencies. She is an advisory board member to the National Quality Improvement Center for the Children's Bureau. And she's just done a number of different wonderful things for education. She's taught public speaking. She's earned a Master of Arts in Communications from California State University in Fullerton. And we have her on today because she has got some great ideas about education. Welcome to our show, Lisa.
Thank you very much.
You know, thank you for waiting. You know, we have an open line radio show. And people take calls, and we have to, you know, go through it like that. But, I mean, again, thank you so much for waiting and calling back.
Well, thanks for having me on.
We watched a riveting video last night on YouTube regarding the project, the Green Dot Project.
Right.
And at Lock School.
Right. So basically what happened at Green Dot is you have a high school in Los Angeles that has been failing for literally decades, and the parents, in partnership with Green Dot Public Schools, decided that they wanted some higher quality education and a better alternative for their kids. And so basically teachers and the parents signed petitions to change their school into a charter school. And now this is the second year that Green Dot has been running Locke as, I believe, 10 small charter schools using the Locke facility.
Now, if I understand right, that the schools are rated in California from 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, 1 being the lowest, and that Locke was at 1 due to gang activity, due to just everything you could possibly imagine was going wrong there. And the principal wanted to turn it around, and he ended up being taken out of his job by the school board. Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, the district basically escorted him off the campus when they were going through all of this. Of course, now, Frank Wells was the name of the principal, and so they, you know, the district did everything they could to try to intervene in the parents and the teachers' decision to have a higher quality school, but in the end, the school board ended up going with the parents and voting to turn Locke into a small number of charter schools. But they did all kinds of trickery and things behind the scenes first to try to keep Locke the failing school in the current system.
Now, when you say they, you're talking about who?
So I'm talking about the district administrators of LA Unified primarily. So the school board, I mean, indirectly, were not originally in favor, but they came around to see the parents' viewpoint in the end. But the district administrators were the ones that actually escorted Frank Wells off the campus, and they sent different school district administrators to talk to the teachers at Locke to try to intimidate them and talk them out of voting to converting to a charter school.
Now, I don't know if people realize that you can do that if you if the parents and the school board can turn their school into a charter school. I didn't realize you could do that.
Right. As long as you have enough parents and enough teachers that want to, I mean, ultimately, you still, it's not easy because you still have to get approval from the school board and the district and the state. But if you make enough noise, as Los Angeles has demonstrated several times since then, and you have a good plan in place and a good partner, it's very difficult for the school district or the school board to resist that. And now we actually have what's called a parent trigger in California, where if enough parents vote to transform their school, this parent trigger, which is a law that was just passed this year, can be take place, and then the school has a more direct route for turning into a charter school. And that was largely, I think, because of the Los Angeles had what was called the parent revolution, and they basically, since Locke, a large number of parents marched on the school district to get a school choice resolution where low-performing failing schools in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles has the largest building program in the United States, where they've been building $20 billion worth of new schools over the last 10 years. And so they have 55 new schools that need to be opened. And so parents wanted some of those new schools to be higher quality charter schools. So basically the school choice resolution, which has led to this parent trigger in California, was parents saying, you know, we don't just want the district with their history of failure, especially for middle schools and high schools, to run new schools. We want the charter schools to also have an opportunity to bid on some of these new facilities, so that they would have opportunity to be housed in some of these new facilities.
Wow. You know, we're going to have it on our website here, is that link to that YouTube, so everybody can see that, to the part about the what happened in the battle for Locke School. And the part that I was so impressed by was not just the parents, but the children that they were talking to that said, you know, we had nothing. We had nothing before. People, you know, the teachers would sit there and just kind of like read a book while everybody ran amok. And the difference and since then has just been, I mean, it seemed like it was going to be remarkable. But they've been in business now for, what, a couple of years?
Yeah.
At Locke?
So basically what's happened so far is last year was their opening year, and then this school year is their second year.
Uh-huh.
So there's basically 1 year of academic scores, and they did have a small amount of improvement academically, but what the big change has really been in the first year of operation is just in terms of safety and discipline and school cleanliness and having teachers and staff that own small numbers of children, so that the culture of the school was changed last year dramatically, so that parents no longer have to be fearful about sending their children to that high school. The kids are very organized. They have very specific relationships with teachers and staff that are responsible for shepherding them through their 4 years of high school. And then in the second year, it will be interesting to see if that translates. They've just now taken state tests at the high school like everyone else in California. If, you know, that this you know, first year of organizing the charter school, yeah, that will then translate into higher test scores.
Okay, hey, Lisa, we have a hard break here for Fox News, and as soon as we come back, we want to talk more about this and then other things that have to do with unions and your foundation there. Call in the bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. This is Carl and Linda Bott. It's 8:34 in the morning. Phone lines here are 605-4567. We're streaming out on KCNR1460.com. Our guest is Lisa Snell, Director of Education and Child Welfare at the Reason Foundation. And Lisa has been talking to us about how families took back their school, the locked school down in L.A., took it away from a crime-ridden place where nobody was learning, and it was a place of danger to where it's a safe haven for students there, and had to do it, though, in the opposition of school administrators and also the teachers' union. Or am I over-speaking here, Lisa?
No. I mean, the teachers' union was definitely opposed to the plan, and they were opposed to the later plan of the school choice resolution. And in fact, since then, the teachers' unions have been fighting tooth and nail to stop the charter schools from actually getting any schools through the school choice resolution. So, you know, it's definitely a constant battle to give parents and teachers control of the schools. The unions, you know, want the money to stay in the district and in the, you know, so that the unions have unionized employees to make up their ranks in Los Angeles, because, you know, when teachers and students move to charter schools, they're no longer operating under the collective bargaining agreement that the union has with LA Unified. So they have every incentive to prevent both teachers and students from leaving the district.
Well, Lisa, go ahead, excuse me.
No, that's okay.
Well, we have several.
That's all I was gonna say.
Okay, we have several emails that have come in, and of course, you know, we're looking at that we've just got just a few, like 25 minutes left, and we want to get all these things in because everybody's been really anticipating you being on the air today. One of the questions is from a listener that says, how much does California spend on kindergarten through 12th education, and what does it get for its money? Teachers, unions want more and more money, but where are the results?
Right. So, I mean, in the last 10 years, basically, we have increased education spending in California so that basically it's gone up about 6% a year, so that it's grown at a greater rate than the overall general fund spending. And now, right now, in 2007-2008, we spent $72 billion on K-12 education, and we are actually down a little bit for the first time because we have been operating under multiple years of $20 billion deficits. And so this probably is the first time in history in the last several decades that K-12 funding in California has actually been flat. And that was backfilled to a certain amount by the federal education $100 billion stimulus money, which went to public education and saved California from some of those state cuts. So basically we're down to about $67 billion being spent just on K-12 education, which is up 191% since 1990.
191% since 1990?
Yeah, so it's grown every year by 6-7% on average as far as the spending. And so, you know, it's been on a constant uphill climb, and it's just an unsustainable amount of money given the current revenue and education situation. And let me just give you some different background on K-12 spending and education. Basically, we work under Proposition 98, which is a constitutional amendment which ties education funding in the state to the state revenue. And so what that means is there's a floor, and that legislators really have no control as far as discretion change K-12 spending, because it's pegged directly to state revenues, which basically K-12 always gets around 50% of the budget. K-12 and higher education get around 50% of the budget. And that is because of constitutional amendments. Now, the reality, though, is because it is tied to revenue and revenue has been down, the budget cuts are not necessarily because, you know, legislators and the governor want to cut education spending, but the bottom line is that we don't have, we have less state revenue, and so the 50% that they generally get is lower, and that's why state revenue has fallen. But we do have the highest teacher salaries in the nation. California ranks number one in teacher salaries, and we're at about 68,000 on average now, and that is actually from the national, the NEA, the National Education Association, their own figures. So it's not like we're gaming this. This is the National Education Rankings, which ranks California number one. We also are number one for higher education salaries in the nation. So we all, you know, you hear a lot about us being ranked at the bottom in public education spending, but the National Education Association actually ranks us in terms of our per pupil spending as 18th. So we actually rank above the national average for K-12 per pupil spending. And that's, again, the NEA's own rankings. It's not like we're gaming this. It's, you know, published by the teachers unions every year, and it's right there in black and white where we rank. So we are not below average in per pupil spending. We are actually a little bit above average. And in terms of teacher salaries, we are number one in the nation.
A lot of this 191% increase on all this, you know, the billions of dollars, how much does it go to people that do not have a direct impact on the student? In other words, they're not teachers, they're not principals, they're not teachers' aides, they are just administrators that have nothing to do with teaching.
Right. So, I mean, in California, about between 30 and 40% of revenue goes to non-instructional. And so that may include some teachers, because one of the problems with the whole, we've had a huge teacher hiring spree in the whole nation in the last 10 years. And we've hired a lot of coaches and consultants and teachers that may not directly work in the classroom. So that nationwide, the teacher-student ratio has fallen to under 15 to 1. And that includes California. We've had a huge number of years of just staffing up, partly because of the class size reduction. But in California and in the nation, basically the number of teachers and administrators that have been hired are double the number of growth in enrollment. So that's one of the reasons that teachers have had to have layoffs and are taking it so hard, is that we have had this hiring spree in the last decade where we've really increased the number of both administrators and teachers to the number of students. And we've been in declining enrollment. So California, since 2004, has actually lost about 90,000 students, and we're projected to be on this declining enrollment overall, yet we've added way more teachers. So it's just basic economics or basic math. You can't lose students and add teachers over a long period of time and not have that structural deficit that school districts are facing today. That doesn't even get into the performance issue, which was the other half of the question. And what that is basically we rank at the very bottom nationally in terms of all different kinds of rankings. We rank right by Washington, D.C. in terms of student achievement on the National Assessment of Education Progress, which is called the NAEP, and that's the nation's report card or benchmark in reading and math.
Hey, Lisa, we really want to cover this one, but we need to take a break here.
Okay.
When we come back, that is the bottom line is, okay, if we're spending this much money, what are we getting from our money,
We have more,
the results,
more emails, too, that we've got our listeners sending in that we'll pose.
All right, this is Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio. Our guest is Lisa Snell from the Reason Foundation. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about what do we get for all this money we're spending in our educational system. This is KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. I'm KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Boddard. It's 8:45. It's going to be raining today. It's going to get up to like 59. Our guest is Lisa Snell, Director of Education and Child Welfare at the Reason Foundation. And we're talking about that California is number one in the amount of money spent on teachers, is about 18th in the amount of money spent on education and the children, and yet we rank, Lisa, did you say last in what we're getting for it?
Yeah, I think we're around 48th, actually, in the National Assessment of Education Progress. And
so Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana are ahead of us?
we're right in there with those states. Like, we're all pulling up the bottom with Louisiana and Mississippi, for sure, and Washington, D.C., don't forget them, although they've actually had some growth in Washington, D.C. in the last couple of years. So, right, our achievement has been flat as far as the nation is concerned on the benchmark for years, yet our spending has been going up, up, and up. And, you know, it's frustrating because we have relatively high standards in California, and we have invested a lot of money in turning around low-performing schools, yet every year we just continue to fail in reading and math as far as the rest of the nation. And that's largely because of a monopoly system with rules that don't serve kids very well.
And what's that? When you say that they don't serve, when they're not serving the children well, on what kind of the rules?
Just the monopoly rules from the teachers union, I think.
Oh, okay.
Really prevent schools from having the flexibility to make changes that would lead to student achievement. So, you know, we have very rigid work rules. We don't allow teachers to come in early and stay late. The teaching job in California is just not very professional. If you compare them to how charter schools have teachers work, you know, they have a much more professional attitude towards students, and they have more responsibility because they don't have tenure, they don't have seniority, their jobs are not guaranteed no matter what they do. And, you know, in California, in Los Angeles, we have what you call rubber rooms, where teachers that are low performing or have done something criminal are housed, where they're not actually fired. And there's only been 5 teachers in the last 10 years that have actually been fired out of LA Unified, and that costs them millions of dollars to actually fire those few teachers. So we just have a system that guarantees adults jobs no matter what the outcome, and that's a large part of the problem.
Lisa, we have a caller. Jim, you're on KCNR.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, see, I was wondering about your statistics. Do those include the private schools and the charter schools, or is that just public schools only?
In terms of education spending?
On the ratings. I think you said on the ratings.
On the ratings for the reading?
No. I mean,
reading,
that's
math,
different.
And things like that, you said?
That's the state average overall, so that's the public schools. The private schools aren't in there at all. And then the charter schools are just mixed into the average because they take a sample of all schools in the state. So
what about the homeschools?
And the homeschools are, I mean, that's the problem, is if you would have to look at each individual data piece because this is just the state average. So the homeschoolers, many of them do take state tests, but when you pull out their data separately, they perform much higher. And the private schools are not required to be included in the state testing system. They are governed by the parent satisfaction, and if their kids aren't learning, then they're not willing to pay tuition to those schools.
And then for the reason for the public schools to be in down, then, could be our illegals that are in the schools that don't know how to speak English yet and things.
Right. I mean, that's a small part of the problem, but if you look at how middle-class students are comparing and how at-risk students of all ethnicities are comparing, it's across-the-board problem with performance, for sure. And it's not just certain populations. It's that our advanced students perform lower than advanced students in other states as well. So it's a general performance problem that we have here in California.
How come the homeschoolers aren't classified, and so people know how well the homeschoolers are doing, or they don't want everybody to know how well they are doing?
Right. I mean, you can find that out. I mean, there have been lots of articles written positively, I think, about homeschoolers, but that's not necessarily in the mainstream media. It's not a big story for them to look at something that's successful and that's working.
Hey, Jim, we're gonna take a break here, but thanks so much for your phone call.
Right.
All right.
Hey, Lisa, right before we take our break, we got one other question, and they're saying, is that kind of like what Jim mentioned here about California being such a large melting pot and how that could have an impact on scores and everything, and your answer to that?
Well, I mean, we do have a large population of English learners, but I don't think we can scapegoat that group because English, if you take Florida, for example, English language learners in Florida, which is similar demographically to California, they've used strict accountability, school choice, competition, and they've gained almost 30 points on these national tests in the last 5 years, including their Hispanic students in Florida are outperforming the average for California. So, you know, that is part of the problem, certainly, but I don't think that you can blame one group for the poor performance, because there's kids in those groups in other states that are doing better. And certainly I don't think that's the reason that our general population, if you look, the Pacific Research Institute, which is in Northern California, they have done a study called Not As Good As You Think, and they looked at all the schools in California where housing prices are above $500,000, where the schools demographically are not low income and not minority necessarily. And those schools also have large numbers of students that are performing below average. And they take on these middle-class schools in California and look at the performance problem. We're spending tons of money in those schools, and those families who are generally satisfied don't realize that their performance is so low on average compared to the rest of the nation. So I'm not sure that if we just could magically take away all English language learners and illegals, that we would solve the problem. I mean, it's still these kind of institutional rules that prevent schools from getting better and competing, because there's no incentive for better performance structurally, that I think is more of the problem than our melting pot. I mean, certainly that is a challenge, and, you know, we need to work on our immigration laws, but I wouldn't say that California's overall school performance problem is because of just the fact that we have higher, a different demographic than everybody else, because Florida proves that that's not true.
Okay, Lisa, we have to take our last break here, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the show. But when we come back, we want to make sure our listeners know how to get a hold of your readings, to look at some of the things that you all are saying. This is Carl Lindebaut here on Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It's Carl and Lindebaut. It's 8:55. Our guest is Lisa Snell from. The heads up the Education and Child Welfare. She's the director of Education and Child Welfare at the Reason Foundation, a nonprofit think tank. Now, Lisa,
you've had so much information today that we've put out. How can people get a hold of what you've written or other things? Is it via the Reason Foundation or other ways?
Right. I mean, the best way is just to look at reason.org and look under education as a subtopic, and you'll see all the different work we've done. I mean, if you check out the May issue of Reason Magazine, which is still in the newsstand, you can see a piece on Obama's education spending frenzy, which looks at what we're doing at the federal level in education, if you might be interested in that. But our website, reason.org, reason.com, Reason TV, where you could see the LOC video that you mentioned and several other education videos that we have up.
We've got about 3 minutes left. So how would you wrap this up for our listeners here?
I mean, I would say that despite the conversation that we've had as being particularly bleak, and but there is a lot of good news in education in terms of the fact that parents have more choices than that they've ever had before. And I think, although, you know, we're not going to see the unions crashing down any moment, that they are running scared, and that there's a lot of things that wouldn't have been possible. For example, right now there's a bill that they're considering to get rid of seniority to fire or hire teachers in California, so that you no longer have the first hired teacher. The last hired is the first fired, if you know what I mean. So only new teachers get pink slips, that they would start looking at actual job performance and making decisions about who gets hired and fired. And that was an untouchable, or something that was unspeakable with the unions. You know, there's 4,000 charter schools in the nation. There's 21 different voucher and tax credit programs in the nation. You know, I think we really have made progress over the last 10 years. There's, you know, 1.5 million homeschoolers. There's lots of different competition and alternatives. And the budget crisis, the positive unintended consequence, is that people are starting to question kind of this mindless spending on education without performance. and it's allowing us to have a lot more critical discussions about what we're getting for our education dollars.
Well,
that would be my ending statement. It's just that things aren't as bad as it seems.
Well, that's great. You know, because when you look at the taking back of Locke School by the parents, and what, you know, I neglected to mention, even though it was you brought it out, is before a charter school can become a charter school, you've got to have teachers sign on for this. And so the teachers also signed on to make it a charter school, even though that the amount of pressure put on by the teachers' union was so much that 17 changed their mind, but then came back on board anyway. And that, and when we watched the school board meeting there, and the people, you know, it was literally a green and red. That the people that wanted the green dot school, that wanted to take their school back, were all wearing green T-shirts, and the ones that opposed were wearing red. The greens outnumbered the reds quite a bit, and then the school board decided to go with the charter school. I'm going to be very interested to see, as I know you are, what's going to happen after for the test this year, since it's been in place for a couple of years now.
Right, and I think, you know, that's the whole thing, is people are starting to be able to look at performance instead of just being on autopilot. And, you know, the fact is teachers' professional jobs are changing. I mean, there's 150 charter schools in LA Unified, and they have hundreds of openings that teachers are applying for every year. And teachers suddenly realize that they have different work opportunities than they had in the past. And if you wanted to be a teacher 10 years ago, really your only choice was to work for a private school or a school district. And, you know, now there's lots of different work opportunities, and that changes young teachers' attitudes about unions and how schools should be run, which will bring change in the future.
Well, let's hope. It's, you know, 191% climb in spending, you know, and we're 48th or 49th in what we're getting for the money for all those, you know, for all the money. You know, there's got to be changes just like in anything else. But
right. I mean, we've got a long way to go, but, you know, at least we're starting down that path.
Well, let's hope so, Lisa. Lisa Snell has been our guest, Director of Education and Child Welfare at the Reason Foundation. And is there a website they can go to?
Right, so just www.reason.org.
Okay, www.reason.org. Thank you so much, Lisa, for being our guest today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow we're going to be at Macy's. We're going to be doing a remote for the Spring Senior Expo. It's going to start at 8 a.m. We're going to be there, of course, from 7 to 9. They've got free breakfast. They've got free lunch. They've got first 50 seniors receiving a $10 gas card. So we'll see you tomorrow at Macy's for the Spring Senior Expo. This is Carl and the Bot. Just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
This is KCNR Shasta, Redding.